Hi, my name is Lena Fersch and I have been in love with improvised theater for half my life. Lately, however, things haven't exactly been great. Improv and I were going through a rough patch and I need some outside help. I really want to get the spark back in the relationship. So I decided to talk to improvisers from around the globe to seek advice. How can I make up with improv? Let's find out. For this first episode, after the summer break, I invited Evan Schweitzer, who is originally from the USA, from New York, but has been living very close to Würzburg for the past 4 years in Frankfurt. Evan is an actor, an improviser, and a teacher, and lately he's been doing lots of scripted theater, for instance at the English Theater in Frankfurt, or at the Theater Alte Brücke, which is also in Frankfurt. In this episode, we talked about his work, we talked about where he's at with improvisation, we talked about communication, performing for kids, and we also played a round of Call My Bluff. So stay tuned and have fun!
So in the last year, I left my improv group. So I currently don't have a group that I perform with regularly. But the last thing I did was I taught an acting for improvisers workshop at the Würzburg Festival.
Yay!
This past summer. Yeah, which I was really, really happy with how that turned out. And I had just the most amazing group of improvisers. And I was very, very lucky. This whole year and a half, however long it's been, has kind of thrown me for a loop. I moved away from improv and I started doing more scripted theater, which is what I wanted to do more of anyway. For me, improv and theater in general is an in-person thing. I tried online improv and I think it has beautiful applications. But for me personally, I needed that connection with a live audience. So I hope to perform more improv as things are opening up now, but it's opportunities here and there rather than regular opportunities with my former group. And my former group, which was TLS Frankfurt, they have since also closed down after 11 or so years.
Wow.
Yeah, that's kind of where I am. I'm kind of like regrouping.
So when you moved away from improvisation, was that mainly because everything was happening online, or was it a struggle that you had with improvisation as an art form?
No, I love improv as an art form. It was more that because I was doing so much improv, I didn't have time to also do scripted theater, which is my home, which is where I started, and I really, really missed it. And since then, I've had the opportunity to do a lot more scripted theater, even in the midst of a pandemic, when the theaters were open, and then they closed again, and then they opened again.
Yeah. So what have you been doing? What was the scripted theater that you did?
So I did my first adult show in German.
Sounds like it was like a...
That sounds like a porno. Yeah. That's the wrong word for it. A show for adults rather than a show for children. Because I've done children's shows in German before. I have a school show that I do with my my fiancé.
Congratulations.
Thank you. That we've been doing for the last 4 years. But this was my first show for adults. It was in Alzenau in Bavaria. At the Burgfestspiele there, it was called Die Werten, which is an adaptation of the Italian play Mirandolina. And they asked me if I'd be interested to do this show in German, and I knew that it would be a big challenge for me. But they were super supportive. In fact, the whole cast was super supportive. And I really got to work on my German pronunciation, and I've improved that a lot.
Perfect.
We performed it outside, and it was great. It was a comedy. It was lighthearted, which I think is exactly what people want to see right now.
Yeah, I think so too. It's nice to, you know, be entertained and to laugh.
Yeah.
So what's your wish for, you know, for improv now that you're not a member of TLS anymore? What's next for you, Evan?
I think I'd love to start going to festivals again, and I'm so glad that I was invited to teach at the Würzburg Festival. I'd love to go to more festivals and teach and perform. In my time improvising, I've made so many friendships and connections with people all over Europe and all over the world, that I hope that I can contact people and say, like, hey, I'm coming to your town, or I'd like to come to your town and perform with you. I'm also a member of Ohana, mm-hmm. which is like a European-based improv collective. And we get together to kind of meet, perform together. It's just us. We meet, we take workshops, we have meetings, we throw around ideas. It's such a creative space, and it's full of amazing creative improvisers from all over Europe. So I'm really happy to be a part of that, because that is kind of a constant thing that keeps my connection to improv.
Yeah, that's
especially
nice.
Now that I don't have a group. Yeah,
sounds like well, when you talk about the project that you did in Alzenau, and also when you talk about Ohana, for instance, that for you it's a lot about the people that you work with. I mean, really, honestly, for who isn't it about the people? But I just wonder how much you're also willing to endure when things are getting rough, because you have people around you that make it worthwhile.
It's really hard to stick around. I've been in situations like that before. And it's not fun.
When there's not a good atmosphere?
When there's not a good atmosphere, when people are at odds with each other consistently, it's not fun. And even though it is work, you know, we do this professionally. Even if you were working in an office, to have someone that you work with that is not easy or fun to work with just makes the whole thing that much more difficult. And in a creative environment, that really, really makes it so much more tough to be creative and to be free when you have that kind of tension.
Are you good at letting go?
I'm good at letting go if I can have an honest conversation with a person and explain how I feel, and they can explain how they feel. And even if we come to the point where we're just like, we shouldn't work together anymore, then I can know that we've had an honest and open conversation about that and put it to bed. And we just, you don't have to like everybody. Not everyone has to like you, and you don't have to work with everybody. And I think those are really important lessons to learn as a human, not just as a performer.
You know, I always thought that that the hard part is letting go of a certain project. I'm finding now that the thing that for me is much harder is really understanding what my problem is with a certain mm-hmm. project or a group or a, yeah, whatever it is, like knowing what my needs are. That's hard. And then I can't communicate because I don't really know what's going on. And I become a person that I don't really like, because I, you know, I get a little mean. I don't really like myself, and I don't really know why I'm acting strangely.
When I've experienced that, I've had to sit with myself and really do some introspection. Why am I being reactive to this person? What is it about this person that is making me act this way? Is it because they're doing something that I don't like in myself? Mm-hmm. And if that's the case, then is there something about myself that I could change for myself, not for the other person, but that I can change in myself? Or is it just this person has a bad attitude? Mm-hmm. And that's also a valid reason.
Are you a diary person?
I used to be, and I have high hopes to do that again. I have a journal / diary, but I haven't written in it in a really long time, years.
When I was a teenager, I wanted to write the perfect diary, I would start a new diary, and I was very motivated, and I would write in it every day, and in a certain way, like I had a certain style that I thought was, you know, who I am at the moment. And then when I wouldn't do it for a couple of months, because, you know, other things were important, I felt like, okay, I have to restart. But I wouldn't just continue to write that journal, I would start a new one. So I have like 15 journals that are half full. which I was quite the perfectionist. If it's not the perfect diary, you know, you can toss it. You just start a new one, because then you can make it perfect.
I had, I was really good at journaling when I was in university. The year that I studied abroad in London, I journaled every single day and just recounted what I did that day and how I felt about it. And I read back some of the pages a while ago, and I had totally forgotten some of the things. Like, I had wanted to get my eyebrow pierced at one point, and I totally forgot about that. And I read it back thinking, oh, I'm so glad you didn't do that, Evan. Oof.
Running a festival, is that something that you'd be interested in?
No. Mm-mm. No, one of the reasons why I left TLS was because I didn't want to run a theater company. I was organizing it with two other people here in Frankfurt, and I realized that one, it was taking me away from doing projects that I wanted to do. And I didn't want the responsibility of running a theater company.
What don't you like about it? What's the thing that keeps you from it?
I think it's all of the non-creative stuff. And it's the fact that, like, I'm a freelancer, so I have to make decisions for myself all day long, and keep myself organized that way. And then, in addition to organizing classes for me to teach and for the people that I was working with to teach, as well as organizing shows. And then during the pandemic, at the beginning, I was super motivated to do online stuff and figure out a way how to do it. And then I burnt myself out. And then when I got over the burnout, then I realized this is not what I want to be doing. I don't want to organize events.
It's interesting what you're saying, that you're a freelancer and you're, you know, making decisions for yourself all day long. So you don't want to continue doing that in a group context as well. I can relate to that very much. You know, that's one of the reasons, I think, why stepping back from the festival felt like a relief, because I love the festival and I was there this year and I had a great time, and the people are very dear to me that still run it. But it's nice to not be responsible. It's nice to be, just helping here and there, or even just be a guest and to be a very small Schraube. I don't know what the English word is for that. Like a
screw.
Like a small screw and like a bigger thing, and not, you know, you don't have to be the person that overlooks the entire machine all the time.
Yeah, and it's sometimes so nice. One of the things that I loved about doing Die Werten was just showing up to rehearsal, preparing what I needed to prepare, and then going home. And not have to then go home and then, okay, I have to design this poster and I have to get this out. Now I have to set up the Facebook event, and now I have to update the website, and I have to add this class onto the website and do this, that, and the other thing. I was just so happy to show up and do my part and then go home and then continue to do my part for the show, you know, learning my lines and everything.
I get it.
Yeah. So
I get it. Nice. In the beginning, when I came back to Würzburg after I was done in Stuttgart with my studies, I had the exact opposite experience because I thought, wow, I'm in this city or town. It's not really a city. So I was back in Würzburg and I felt like the world is my oyster. Now I can do whatever I want because I have the infrastructure, I have the contacts. I can just, you know, do every project, any project that I can think of, I can make it work. And I felt really empowered by that. But it sort of changed at some point. The balance was off. Yeah. And then it was like, okay, I can do all of these things and I can make projects happen. But it also means that I'm always responsible for these things to happen. And I'm longing for that. Like when you say, yeah, it's nice, you show up for rehearsal and you just do your part and then you go home. That sounds wonderful to me. And I think probably it's going to switch back at some point because, you know, it always does.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But right now I just want to lean back and be part of something.
Yeah, it's really nice. And I think I needed that too. And to just circle back to TLS and what we talked about earlier with communication and leaving projects, I was very open and honest with them about how I felt and what I wanted. And they were very gracious and open with me in return. And so there was no bad blood when I left the TLS, which I think was the best of all possible outcomes.
Mm-hmm.
Because I never want to burn a bridge. And I still work creatively with them, just in a very different capacity. And it's great to be able to like still have maintain those relationships, but without the weight and the pressure, mm-hmm, of running a theater company.
I get that, and I think it's also good to know that, you know, whatever need someone has is fine. It just might not be the thing that I need, right? So if you're separating from someone or a group, sometimes people just want different things, and it's just how it is, and it doesn't work together. But it doesn't mean that someone's done anything wrong. It's just we want different things and we need different things.
And I think it's so important to talk about that, because when you don't talk about that, when there's not open communication, that's when resentment starts getting bred and grow.
But do you ever feel like that friendship can be a factor that makes that harder? Because I feel really lucky that I'm working together with my friends. I sometimes fear that it's not good for the friendship, if I'm completely honest, which I know intellectually it's not the right approach, but it's hard if, you know, if you're really good friends with someone and you feel like you want different things in the context out of your friendship. I think it takes a lot of, you need to be a big person to separate those two things.
I think you just have to have a lot of trust in the relationship, and you just have to be able to switch those hats. Like, now I have my friend hat on and now I have my work colleague hat on. That could be tricky to navigate, no doubt about it. I've been there. Sometimes you don't want to hurt your friend, but your needs are not being met and therefore you're unhappy. And if you don't talk about it, I found that it ends up being worse,
mm-hmm,
in the long run, because that's where that resentment builds up. And then you end up not liking the person, mm-hmm, who was once your friend. And that's terrible.
In communicating that, I'm just wondering, do you communicate it like that as well? Say you have like an issue with a good friend that you're working with. Do you talk to them that way? Look, as a friend, da 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 da, but as a your colleague, I have to tell you that. Do you say it like this?
Something to that effect. I try to box it into, this is coming from your work colleague rather than your friend.
Mm-hmm.
If it's a work situation, that. Just to make it, I try to make it as clear as I can. I'm not always the best at explaining myself. I fumble over my words or I say the wrong thing, but we're all human.
Definitely.
I really try to explain it as best as I can, and hope that they afford me some modicum of grace when I mess up, and I hope that I also do that in return, because we're all gonna mess up at one point.
You do kids theater, right? In schools, Galaktologisch it's called. I watched a couple of videos and I think it just looks really sweet. And now that we're talking about communication, I think that is one of the key points, right? How to communicate that comes up in that project.
Right. It's one of the parts of the show. This is the show. It's in German. We talk to the kids about... what happens if you're not getting along with someone at school, and we give them this tool that we call in German die drei Ws, which is wie, warum, Wunsch. How do you feel? Why do you feel that way? And what is your wish? What do you want from the thing? But we also talk about what if those three Ws don't work, and we talk about walking away. Mm-hmm. Which is also really important. If you're not getting something that you need from someone, whether you're not getting your needs met somehow, and you talk to them about it, and you talk to them how you feel, why you feel that way, and what you want, and they don't respond in a positive way, whether it's an open way or they just disregard what you just said, it is okay to walk away.
And you play an alien.
I play an alien.
And it looks so sweet with your big ears.
Yeah, so we do the show for dritte, vierte, and fünfte Klasse here in Germany. We mostly play around in Hessen, especially around the Frankfurt Offenbach area. But I think we're doing a show up in Schleswig-Holstein
in
November, which is great because to finally take the show on tour. My fiance has an alter ego that he plays on stage called Malte Anders, and he has several shows. One that he does for like high school age kids. That's about teaching them what homosexuality is, but through comedy. Everything is through comedy. And he also has several adult shows for adults, or evening programs that he does for adults that also have something to do with homosexuality and an identity. And so, yeah, we do this show. The show is mostly about being different, Galaktologisch, because I am an alien and he's introducing me to my new schoolmates. And I have these three missions that I have to complete. And I complete two of them, but then the third one, we kind of give to the students to give us ideas about how I can bring the two halves of my planet, Terra Galactus, back together. Because there's a sun side and then there's a moon side, and they are always fighting with each other.
That sounds really cool. And what a cool age to perform in front of. Because I guess they're just, you know, they just want to get into that. Or at least it looked like it from the YouTube videos. Do you like performing for kids?
Yeah, it's kids. I've been performing for kids. Actually, professional shows out of university was... like a national tour of a children's show in the U.S. And kids are the most honest audience.
It can be painful, though, as well, right?
Yeah, it can be really, really, really painful. But one of the things that keeps me going in children's theater is that I remind myself that for most of these kids, this is their first time going to the theater. And that is so cool that I get to be on stage for their first time seeing a show. Mm. When I did that first children's show back in 2007, 2006, whenever I did it, my nephew, who was very young at the time, he was like 3 or 4, he came to see the show because we had a date close by. And that was his first time at the theater. Aww. And to have him in the show, in the audience, and me on stage, and it's his first time at the theater, that was the thing. Like, well, this is really cool. This is so, like, I hope that I spark joy in these kids and an interest in theater that continues throughout their lifetime. But the kids love the show, the Galactologish. Sometimes after the show, they come up to me and they want an autograph. And they ask if my ears are real, because I wear kind of these alien ears, and I'm wearing blue contacts, and I paint my beard blue.
I like that age, because when they're, I like it too when they're teenagers. It's a little bit different. You need to get them in a different way. But kids, especially like third graders, they make it really easy because there is no such thing as being too cool for something yet. So they just, you know, they scream and they shout, and I quite like it. I don't perform much in front of children, but I work at schools. Mm-hmm. And even though I've like energetically, it's the hardest to work with like first or second graders, it's in a way it's also the most rewarding, because they come to you afterwards and they give you like a big hug around the waist because they're so tiny, and they just want to perform in front of each other all the time. It's just really nice to work with enthusiastic people, and kids are just very enthusiastic. It's nice.
Yeah, the second mission that I have to do is in the show is I have to find a real friend on Earth. And so we put the mission on the I'm forgetting my English, the Leinwand. What is that in English?
Like a screen?
Yes, that's it.
happy to help.
We project it on the screen, and we say, oh, this is the next mission. I have to find a real friend on Earth. And almost every hand in the audience shoots up, and they're like, ooh, me, I'll be your friend.
That's so sweet.
Yeah, but you also teach adults, right?
I do, yeah.
Do you, because I mostly teach adults. I don't often teach children. I normally just perform for them. But I find that in teaching adults, one of my main jobs is helping them get out of their own way. Mm-hmm. And reconnect with how they were at, like, when they were in third grade or when they were in fourth grade, when they didn't care what other people thought of them, or they didn't care about acting foolish or silly. Do you find that as well?
It depends. It depends on if I'm teaching a workshop with, you know, if someone signs up for a beginner's class, usually they're happy to play around, unless they're taking the class because they are very shy and they want to, you know, be able, for instance, to speak at their friend's wedding without, you know, breaking into sweat before. That also happens sometimes. And then it's exactly what you're saying. Then you just sort of need to let them experience that it can be fun to to be foolish, and, you know, to just, I think in companies it's interesting, because at the beginning I often get because I also look very young, so I think sometimes people are a little bit like, what she's gonna tell us, but then I'm always surprised at how fast people enjoy the play. If you just, you know, if you're doing a circle game, something like name clapping, or you know, the crazy seven exercise, for instance, I'm always surprised that they want to have fun.
Yeah. In teaching in companies, I've experienced the same exact thing. They kind of, you know, they're looking at you with their arms crossed and like, what are you going to teach us? Ugh, improv, it's so stupid. Ugh, we have to be here. And then the first thing I try to do is make them laugh. Mm-hmm. even if I tell like the stupidest joke or if I'm explaining something, I usually make fun of myself, if mm-hmm. that makes sense. I make jokes at my own expense, I should say. So they know that I'm not taking myself too seriously and they shouldn't take themselves too seriously. And we're just here to have fun and maybe learn some new skills.
It gives them permission, right? It gives them permission to also, you know, loosen up a bit.
And I find that from the moment I make them laugh, that's when they start to relax into it. I also have a problem, the same problem you, because I also look young, mm-hmm. and I'm short. So they look at me and they're like, "Who is this kid trying to teach us how to have fun?" And in my head, I'm just like, "I'll show you! I'll show all of you!" Let's try this.
All right. It's my favorite. It's Call My Bluff. And it works like this. We'll each say a statement that might be true or false. Like a statement of something that we've experienced in our lives, something that's true about ourselves. And the other person can ask questions about that statement. And then we'll decide, is this true or false? And we collect points. So we'll do 3 rounds. All right?
Okay. Ooh.
Would you like to tell me the first story?
Okay. I was once picked to come on stage during a live sex show.
Okay. where was this?
In Amsterdam.
In Amsterdam. And when was this?
This was in 2003.
And what did you have to do when they picked you?
It was just one woman. I got up on stage and she took my shirt off. And then I was like, oh God, I really don't want to get naked. And I looked at her and I'm just like, I don't want to get naked. And she goes, don't worry, we're just taking your shirt off. And I said, okay. should I continue?
Yeah, I want to know what happened next.
Is this a PG podcast or a...
Yeah, no worries, no worries. This is an adult podcast.
Okay. and then she laid me on the stage, and then there was like this turntable that raised up and then started spinning around, and she put the base end of a dildo in my mouth.
Oh my and goodness.
Then
proceed. Really? Okay. Yeah. Evan, I'm gonna go ahead and say this is true.
It is true.
Yes, I saw your face and there was no doubt. And do you wanna know, what's funny? I was gonna tell you a statement that was, I went to a live sex show in Amsterdam. I was going to say that to you because I went to one as well as a teenager, and but I wasn't asked on stage. I did encounter a naked vampire in the hallway, and that was kind of crazy. But but no, I wasn't asked on stage.
Yeah, and just to be clear, I didn't volunteer. She came out into the audience and started like looking around, and I was just chatting with my friend Laura, who I was on vacation with. And she just came up to us and she pointed at me and she's like, you. And I was like, me? And she goes, yeah, come with me. And she takes me with her onto the stage. After it was done and I stood back up, I just remember looking out into the audience. And the audience was my friend Laura, who had a look of horror on her face. And the rest of the audience was just businessmen from Asia.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
That was the theater. And it was at the Casa Rosa, which I don't know if it's still there in Amsterdam.
Shout out to our friends in Amsterdam. Yeah. Let us know if Casa Rosa still exists.
I hope my parents don't listen to this podcast.
All right. Are you ready for my first statement?
Yes.
Okay. Okay, let's go with this. When I was 10, I got stuck on an elevator for an hour.
Were you alone?
No, I was not alone. I was there with my cousin, who is 3.5 years younger, and she was completely panicking, which was actually, in a way, a good thing, because I couldn't panic. I needed to take care of my cousin so that mm-hmm. because she was crying, she was very upset, but it was quite scary.
So you were there for an hour. How did you get out of the elevator?
So at some point, it just started again. We pressed the button, and but nobody answered, because this was a very old building, and we were there for either my mom's or my dad's aunt's funeral. I don't even remember, because we weren't really that close to those people. We just went there, and we were playing around in the building, and they knew that we were somewhere off. And nobody really, you know, because we were off all the time, we were friends, and we would, mm-hmm. you know, so nobody was really worried that we were gone for an hour. Also, it was a funeral, and, you know, funerals are places where you meet people again that you haven't seen in a long time. So everybody was, you know, just catching up, and we pressed the button, and nobody would answer. And we sat there, and she cried, and I comforted her, and I told her stories. And then after an hour, the thing moved again. So we were just very lucky.
Okay. I'm gonna call your bluff.
It's true. It's a lie.
It's true. It is a lie.
I lied. Yeah. I did lie. I went. That funeral existed. And I was on an elevator with my cousin, and she thought for a second that it got stuck, and she immediately started crying. But it wasn't the case in the end. It was just like for 2 seconds. So it just extended a story. But you called my bluff.
I was also going to tell a story about how I got caught in an elevator.
We're so connected. Seems like we just want to tell the same stories all the time. Okay, go ahead. Go ahead.
Okay, let me think. I had lunch with Patrick Stewart.
Who is Patrick Stewart? Oh, if the listeners Patrick could Stewart. See your face right now.
Patrick Stewart most famously played Jean-Luc Picard on Star Trek The Next Generation.
I know who that is.
Also played Professor Xavier, Charles Xavier, in the first few X-Men movies.
Is he... Do you know the show Extras? Was he on Extras?
Yes, he was.
All right. I know who this is. And you had lunch with him or dinner?
Yes.
All right. When was that? And what was the occasion for the lunch or dinner?
So I met him. I saw a play that he was in London called A Life in Theatre. And I went to the stage door, which is something that I don't do anymore. But I went to the stage door to... get a picture with him and to get his autograph, because I truly adore this man. I really, really, I do. And I'm a big Star Trek fan. So I wanted to tell him that, like, how much I felt like he legitimized Star Trek, and what a fantastic actor he was, and how much I would love to work with him one day. And so I was there with some friends I was studying with, and the stage door was packed, mobbed with people, because Joshua Jackson was starring in the show with him. And this was right when Dawson's Creek was finishing its run on TV, so he was still pretty famous.
So he was in Dawson's Creek as well?
He was in Dawson's mm-hmm. Creek. He played Pacey in Dawson's Creek. Mm-hmm. But I was there to see Patrick Stewart. And so he comes out of the stage door and he's like signing autographs and taking pictures. And he comes up to me and I just start talking to him about how much he means to me and how I'm an actor and I'm in theater school. And, and I would love to work with him one day. And he asked for my contact information, and he goes, I'd love to have lunch with you. I will get in touch with you. And he did, and we had coffee together, and he just gave me some really sage advice about acting and keeping true to yourself, and how much he loves when his day is finished and he gets to come to the theater and perform. That's when he feels the happiest. And as a budding acting student, I was like, oh God, this is what I need to hear. And he was just lovely. I have not spoken to him since, because I also didn't want to like impose on this celebrity. But I will forever hold that time with him in my heart.
Well, Evan, I want this story to be true. And so I will say it is true, because I believe. I'm a believer.
It's not true.
Oh my God. The whole thing? Well, you liar.
It's partially not true. I combined a couple stories. I did meet Patrick Stewart at the stage door, but I was so starstruck, I couldn't get any words out. And my friend had to just say what I wanted to say. And I just held up my camera and I said, please. And I got his autograph and I took a picture of him, because he wasn't taking pictures with people.
I see. Okay.
So Patrick Stewart, if you're listening, let's work together sometime.
Yes, Patrick.
Putting that out in the universe. And then there was another story with an actress that I met at a stage door, Marion Seldes. I saw her in a show. Actually, the day that I found out that I got my equity card, my Actors Union card in the U.S., and she said this, I can't wait till my day is done and then I can come to the theater. That is such an honor for me, and that's something that's stuck with me since then.
Nice. Nice, you liar. I'll give you my next one, okay? When I was a kid, I used to write myself into the Harry Potter books.
Did you have a specific character that you have created or something to fit yourself into the...
No, it was just me. It was just me. When everybody met on the Hogwarts train for the first time, I, just wrote how I would also enter that specific, Kabine, or, that Abteil, compartment.
Oh, yeah, that's actually the word, compartment. Mm-hmm. Your English is much better than mine.
Thank you very much. Probably your German now, after doing Die Wirtin, is much better than mine. I would just be myself, but I would also be friends with Ron, Hermione, and Harry. And I met them on the train as well.
What house were you in?
Oh, Gryffindor, obviously.
Of course.
Which I'm not, because I'm on Pottermore, and they tell me I'm Ravenclaw, which I'm also happy with. But I was Gryffindor, because I was part of the whole thing. I also fought against Voldemort and everything. I was in it.
Did you like insert yourself in every book or every movie, or no. Was it just kind of like,
it was just,
I was there
one.
Too.
No, it was just, okay. I made up a lot of stories in my mind. I didn't write it all down, but I just imagined myself being part of that group of friends. That sounds so, I think, yeah, well, a little bit sad also, but I just wanted to be part of them so badly. So I imagined those stories, and then I just started writing them down chronologically. So starting with the Hogwarts Express. And then I did that for a while, but obviously it doesn't work, because, as the story progresses, you can't just put yourself into every single thing. So I went back to just imagining how I would also slay dragons and, whatever they do, and just, curse people and fight evil. Yeah.
I'm going to say this is true, because I also did something very similar.
That is actually true. I did do that. Yeah. And you did something similar?
Yeah. So there was this, when I was a kid, there was this TV show that was kind of like a knockoff of the Mighty Morphin Power Rangers. It was called VR Troopers. Mm-hmm. And I created this whole plot line that one of the characters had came from like a troubled home, and that I was his like younger brother, and that's how I inserted myself into the plot of the show, and that would be how I would get onto TV.
Very cool. I like it. Okay, last round. What do you have for me?
Okay. I was once in the hospital for 2 weeks.
What happened to you? Why did you have to go to the hospital?
I had an infection in my leg. And I thought that I had food poisoning because I woke up in the middle of the night. And I started getting sick and I was in a lot of pain. And I thought that I was vomiting so hard that I pulled some muscle in my groin, and I couldn't walk. And I went to my doctor, and it was a Thursday, and I wouldn't get the blood results until Monday. And Timo had to take me to the emergency room a couple times over the weekend because I was in so much pain and I was running a fever. Oof. And then I finally go back to the doctor's office, and the receptionist at the front desk, she said, "Herr Schweitzer, there's a problem with your blood."
Oh my God.
And it just turned out I had a massive infection in my body. My doctor sent me directly to the hospital, and they very quickly said, "We're gonna have to admit you." And I had to have like two surgeries to get like this infection out of my leg.
Where did it come from? Is it bacteria or?
It was. They found out that it was like a bacteria from the gut, but they weren't sure whether it was from my gut. The running theory is that when I was on vacation in Gran Canaria, like a month before, that I had either gotten bit by something or I had a small cut in my leg. And when I went in the water, there was some nasty bacteria swimming around that got into my leg.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oof, I'm going to go ahead and say you didn't make that up. That's true.
That is true. I have a really gnarly scar on the inside of my right leg.
Oh, wow.
Because of it. But thank God for health insurance here in Europe/Germany. Because if this had happened when I was still living in the US, I would be bankrupt.
Really?
Yeah.
Really?
Absolutely. 2 weeks in the hospital and two surgeries and multiple like x-rays and CAT scans and yada, yada, yada.
Mm. But here's a question. If you have health insurance, because obviously in the US, to be honest, I have to admit that I don't know how it is at the moment after Obamacare and everything. But if you do have health insurance, is it still that expensive if you're in the hospital, or is it not covered?
Well, I mean, I also don't, I haven't experienced what it's like since Obamacare either, because I left the U.S. before Obamacare really came into force. Mm-hmm. I was living for a few years without health insurance in the U.S. before I moved to Europe. So,
wow. Okay. Ready for my last one?
Yes.
Okay. I once bit my dentist.
How old were you?
I was like 21, 22. It was an accident.
Obviously. I would hope so.
No, I did it on purpose. I just didn't like him. I just didn't like his face.
Was he doing a specific procedure?
Well, I had been seeing him for the past 3 weeks and on a regular basis because I had an infection in my mouth, mm-hmm. which turned out that it was because of wisdom teeth, because one was coming out, but the other one wasn't, like the one on the bottom was coming out, but the one on the top didn't. so it infected my jaw because it just didn't have anything to go against. The tooth came out, but it didn't have anything to go against. So I went to the dentist and he would, you know, put some ointment or something on it. And he said, no, it's going to be fine. Don't worry about it. And then 5 days later, I was like, it still hurts so much. So I came back and he was still like, no, I have this, you know, you have to gurgle. I don't know if gurgle is a word. Is it a word?
It's gargle.
Gargle?
Yeah.
Gargle this and it's going to be fine. And so I came back a third time and then it was really infected by that point. And he touched it with like one of these metal sticks and it was so painful that I just, you know, bit down hard. And he was very professional about it because I felt really embarrassed. And he was like, no, this happens all the time. I don't believe that it does. But that's what he said. So it made me feel good about it. But he also didn't help my problem. I had to see a different dentist, actually like a jaw surgeon. I don't know how you say that in English. And she just said, we need to take those two wisdom teeth out right away because this is not going to get any better by like just putting stuff on it. And this is, you know.
I'm going to say this is true.
Are you sure?
Oh, well, now I'm not sure.
I don't know, Evan. I might just be a very, very good liar. Or I did bite my dentist's finger. Who knows?
Can I say it's partially true?
But then you have to say what is true.
I think that you did have impacted wisdom teeth that you had to get taken out. Mm-hmm. But maybe you didn't bite your dentist.
Ding, 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 ding. You're correct. I didn't bite my dentist, but I I did have like this infection and he didn't really help me, but I didn't bite him. Very good, Evan. Very specific. I've never had anyone answer so specifically and correctly.
Oh.
Yes. We just stepped up our game in this game.
Yeah. Next level.
Very good. I think you win because you had it all right and I got one wrong. So congratulations. You Thank won. You. Call my bluff.
Hooray.
Hooray. Well, it's been so nice talking to you. Thank you so much for coming on the podcast and talking improv and talking, you know, life.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. When I got your email, I was so honored and touched. And I told Timo, I was like, I'm going to be on a podcast. Lena invited me for a podcast.
Of course, it's been lovely talking to you. It's always lovely talking to you.
You as well.
Hey everyone, thanks for listening to this first episode after the summer break. I hope you enjoyed it. I actually changed a few things about this podcast. First off, it's only going to come out once a month, every last Wednesday of the month, which is because I have more work. I'm not complaining. But everything else basically will stay the same, so not so many things will change. Also, there's one more thing. This podcast is produced by the Association of the Würzburger Impro-Theater Festival. Many of you might know our main annual event that usually happens at the end of October. But we also organize various other projects throughout the entire year. For instance, this podcast. If you'd like to support our work, you can help us with a donation. You can donate via PayPal. That's paypal.me/improvfestival or directly to our bank account. For more info, visit the link in the description. Thank you so much and have a great day wherever you are on this planet.